Welcome to another episode of the Big Picture Business Podcast. Today we have a topic I think you're really going to enjoy. I know it was super fun for me going through just these ideas. How about you, Rory? You ready?
Yeah, absolutely. Why don't you tell them what we're going to talk about?
Let's do it. Today is all about life hacks. The title for this episode is Best Life Hacks to Help You Save Time and Money. Because isn't that what we all want to do? We want to save time and money, right? And so we have put together this amazing list of everything from products to just tips, things that we've done, things that we've learned, and we think you're really going to enjoy it.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, we're going to talk about money hacks and real estate hacks, daily hacks that you can do, hacks for your cars, marketing hacks, and cooking hacks.
Cooking hacks. All right, Rory, you want to get started? Let's just go for it. Let's jump right in.
Well, okay. So a lot of people might be asking, like, what is a life hack, right?
What on earth is a hack? We're not hacks. You know, I mean, I don't think, no. Yeah. So what the heck is a life hack, Rory?
All right. So a life hack is just a way for you to get a result, but get it quicker or get it in a manner where you actually might save some money. So there's usually like a tried and true way to do things, mm-hmm. and people live by that. And by hacks, what we're talking about is, well, how do we find a way to do the same thing, get the same result, but do it while saving time and money?
Exactly.
That's the key.
Yep. All right. So the first life hack we're going to talk about is all about cars. If you guys have watched or listened, you know that Rory and I love some cars. We're big into cars.
Well, yeah. And, you know, we haven't actually, I mean, in a few episodes, we've talked about it a little bit, but we haven't really like gone down the rabbit hole of our love of cars. But I was actually talking with my mom recently about this. She doesn't understand the car obsession, right? And so, like, growing up, she was like, I just don't get it. Like, why are you doing this? Like, why do you own 7 cars?
Hello, mom. Gosh.
Right. And so, you know, we're talking with her. I was just like, but this goes back like to being really, really young. I was like, you should have seen it coming. If you saw me at 4 years old, I was obsessed with cars. Yeah. I literally would go into my grandparents' car, and they had this Audi that they had that, you know, stick shift, late 70s, you know, car. And I used to go out in it and I'd pretend to drive and I'd just be like going through the gears and everything. I did that for hours and hours and hours.
You still have time to be like a pro racer. Just do it. Just quit marketing and just go live out your dream.
And that was the other thing. I wanted to race cars. But being an only child, my mom was way too freaked out.
That's fair. Okay, so number one hack for cars is, Rory, what is it?
Do not buy a car that has a branded or accident, a branded title or been in accidents.
It has to have a clean title.
Clean title.
And I actually just learned something. I think that this is really important to know. If you're looking up records on Carfax, sometimes Carfax won't show if a vehicle had been in an accident. It won't show. There's a couple other ones where it may or may not show, but I found out that my Beamer was in an accident. And I didn't even know because I was given the Carfax when I bought the car. I did my own due diligence on it. And I just learned like a week ago that it had been an accident because I ran a report on another site. What? So yeah, make sure you do a lot of research ahead of time if you're purchasing a used vehicle. It's really important.
Yeah. What was that other site?
Autotrader.com is what it is.
Okay. So another thing to think about. And so this is something I learned actually from my mom. A lot of people get in the trouble where they're like, oh, I just need to get a car. And they're usually stressed out and, you know, potentially don't even have a lot of money at the time to get something. And they go and meet someone somewhere and they go, oh yeah, you know, like go take it, you know, down the street, go get it checked out or whatever. Right. But there was this whole scam that happened with my mom where she went to an auto shop to buy a car. She went, took it to a gas station down the road for them to check it out. They said, everything's great. She's, you know, driving around up on the freeway, and the car just starts shaking and doing weird stuff. She was really, really scared. She takes it to another auto shop. They said that it is two cars welded together.
What? What?
Yeah. Goes to the police. The police say, you know, we've been watching these people. There's nothing we can do for you, though. So she
bought it.
So she had already bought it. And this was like a month later that she was trying to figure out why the car was having so many issues.
Whoa. And she couldn't tell?
Right. So they had this whole scam set up.
Stolen vehicles, chop shop style.
Yeah. Chop shop set up. And the police were watching them, but hadn't been able to, you know, take them down yet. Wow. And they had a deal worked out with the local auto shop.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Wow. So you have to be really careful about buying cars. Now, this also applies to, you know, I mean, you have a German car, or we both own multiple German cars, right? They're known for being great cars and having high quality, but they also have a lot of issues because they're pushing the boundaries with their technology. So my recommendations, anytime you're, you know, there's nothing wrong with buying them, but if you do, make sure you do your research on it, do all, you know, the standard Carfax and, you know, inspections and stuff like that, but make sure to get an extended warranty for them specifically.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I know a lot of people are against extended warranties, but in certain instances, they're really valuable and will save you, because the things that go wrong on these types of cars are really expensive. And so, you know, even if you pay $2,000 for your extended warranty to get another 100,000 miles out of it, it's so totally worth it, because almost any major repair is going to be that much.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I was looking at my bills just this last year for the Beamer before we moved out here, and I have purchased the Beamer 3 times over just in the last few years in just keeping the car really tuned. So my recommendation, again, like Rory brought up a point, I think it was in the last episode, where it's like, we really live well below our means, right? So we like having fast, fun cars, and we like doing all this stuff, but make sure that if you're going to buy a vehicle like this, you have like a savings account for your vehicle, because it is going to need to be tuned up. It's not the reliable Honda.
And that gets into like some of the things that, like, maintaining your car.
Mm-hmm.
If you actually follow the maintenance that's recommended for the car, but not only that, pay attention. A lot of cars these days will say, oh, you can go 10,000 miles. Don't go 10,000 miles, you know, for changing the oil or something.
No.
Even though it says that, you know, 5,000 miles, like, just be consistent with it, but be consistent and use the right stuff. If you're doing it yourself, you're taking it to a shop, you know, a way to save money is to buy the oil and take it to like a Jiffy Lube, and just don't buy any of their upsells, because it's all a bunch of crap.
Correct. Yeah. Bring in your own.
Yeah. If you don't know how to do it yourself, you can do things like that, and that'll save you some money. But just make sure to stick to the maintenance schedules. And when they say things like, especially on the German cars, change the timing chain at 60,000 miles. Don't wait to 80 to do it. Change it at 60, because there's a reason they know it's going to break.
Yeah.
In most cases, like, that's why they say it. Check what's actually covered by your warranty, because there's different warranties that come with cars. They usually have a 3 or 4 year, a 5 year, 10 year, 20 year type of thing for different things.
Yeah.
So it's really good to stay on top of that and see what's covered.
Yeah.
Now, related to that is also cleaning your car, being consistent with making sure that the inside and the outside is clean. And it's really important to do this for resale value.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you're always thinking, like, what if I had to sell my car tomorrow?
Mm-hmm.
That's how you have to think about, like,
absolutely
maintaining it. Like, yeah, I mean, life gets in the way. We're not always perfect with everything, but, you know, if spills happen, clean them up. And buy products that are quality for cleaning, like a good leather cleaner if you have leather. make sure that you, you know, are, you know, saturating the leather, making it soft, and make sure it's clean, doing those things. You don't have to be like crazy obsessive about it, but just make sure you're doing them pretty consistently so that the leather doesn't get worn out.
Right.
And then doing things like, there's a great product called Folex for cleaning stains in carpets and on upholstery. Mm. And then for other little cleaning things like cleaning wheels, like your you know, your rims and, mm-hmm. and even cleaning the tires themselves, I use something called Crud Cutter. Mm-hmm. And then I combine it with using a steam cleaner. Now, I have a professional auto detailing steam cleaner, and it's been one of the best investments that I've probably ever made, because I used to clean, you know, my cars, and I would always struggle in getting like all the little bits and pieces out of areas and like getting the stuff out of the carpet that would get like matted in there and stuff.
The goldfish,
and then as soon as I got the steam cleaner, I could go through the whole car and get every little, you know, crevice and thing out. I could get stains out that I couldn't get out before with just scrubbing like by hand, you know. And I've got young kids, so I mean, stains happen like almost every time we get in the car, right? So, I mean, yeah.
What type of steamer is it?
So it's a high pressure steamer. It goes up to about 300 degrees.
Do you remember the brand?
It's by a company called Chief Steamers.
Nice.
Yeah. So that works exceptionally well. Right. You can even use it in your house as well. I use it to actually clean my shoes too. So oh, yeah. if I get like dog poop on my shoe and I like really want it to be super clean, I'll use actually Crud Cutter and the steamer to get that off, and it cleans it. It like will shoot the dog poop right off of it, and you know, sanitize it and really well. But actually, like just getting the dirt and stains off of your shoes that you can get just from wearing them really well.
Nice. Something that I do want to say. Hmm. So, having been the general manager for an auto detailer for a few years, make sure that you do not use Armor All. And Armor All is kind of like a big name brand, right? Do not use Armor All inside your vehicle. Don't do it. Everything will look super, super greasy. You cannot take it off. Once it's on, it's on. So whatever you do, don't do it. And I'm not saying Armor All is a bad product. It makes, I mean, put it on the outside of your tires if you want to make them look shiny for a few minutes, but do not put it on the inside of your car.
There's a lot better quality products. I use for cleaning, for doing the inside stuff, I use a local company.
Nice.
That makes, you know, like a nice quality. Yeah, it was $2 more a bottle than the other stuff, but it doesn't have that shine and grease look to it. It looks nice, and it protects against UV. So nice. That's really important too.
Yeah, good.
Now, one of the other things as far as cars that I found really, really important is I take out the original floor mats that come with the car, and I put rubber floor mats in. And I do this for two reasons. One, I live in an area where it rains a lot. So, you know, that keeps the carpets clean. But when you go to sell the car and you put the original floor mats back in and they don't have any wear on them, it looks so much better. You will get a higher price for your car.
Yep, 100%. It's exactly what I did. I have WeatherTech mats. And yeah, and they're nice. They look nice and you can easily clean them. And yeah, you can get mud on them or whatever.
And for a lot of cars, you can get ones that are custom made. Yeah. For those cars, mm-hmm. You can go to any store, any like
AutoZone
grocery or type of store, Walmart or whatever, and get, you know, Target, and get your basic ones that'll do the job. But you can also get the custom made ones for mm-hmm. usually reasonably priced. You don't have to go and pay like $300 for a set. But I think I paid for our Lincoln. It was, we needed three sets, so we have three rows. Right. So we had a back row, then mm-hmm. we had the middle row, and then with the front, you know, two mats as well. Mm-hmm. I think it ended up being like $80 or $100 for custom rubber mats.
That's impressive.
Yeah.
As usual, my Beamer ones, they were $350. Yeah. Everything with BMW is so unbelievably expensive. Yikes. But it is the ultimate driving machine.
Yeah. All right. So, you know, I hope some of those car hacks help you, because they're going to, you know, set you up. So if you have your car and you're needing to sell it, it's going to be a lot easier to sell it. And you're just going to have a nicer experience around if you do some of these things.
Yeah, exactly.
All around. Yeah.
Moving on to number two in our life hack series, we're going to talk about household supplies and cooking.
Yeah, mostly cooking.
Mostly cooking.
We both cook a lot.
Well, we might cook a lot, but these days with the kids and work, it feels some like, it is going to sound funny, but it feels like a burden some days where it's like, I need to eat. it's one more thing on my list of things I have to do. Yeah. And so we have, both my husband and I have done a lot of research on ways to save a lot of time in the kitchen. And for us, one of the number one tools we have is an Instapot. For those of you that do not have an Instapot, go out, get one. We'll put a link to one in the show notes for you. It is fan-freaking-tastic. It's so much better than a regular crock pot. Crock pots are great too, but an Instapot, oh man, I've made the best soup and ribs. I mean, you can make anything in this thing. It's amazing. So that's been a really efficient tool for us and our family and our lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And then the other kitchen gadget that we love is called the Joule, and it's a sous vide. For those of you who don't know what sous vide is, it's a method of cooking where you are bringing things up to a temperature in water and you're cooking things in water. It can be steak, it can be burgers, chicken, fish, whatever.
Well, to explain, they're inside a plastic bag when this happens.
Right. So there's thank you. So there's specific types of bags, like super safe, FDA, food grade, all that stuff. Yeah, yes, it's food grade safe.
Yeah, and this is something in high-end restaurants. This is how they're cooking the food in a lot of cases.
Yeah. So if you've ever been to a super high-end like steakhouse or something, this is probably what you've eaten is something that's been sous vide. So the Joule is a super cool little tool. It connects to our app and you submerge it in water and you put your food in a bag and you season it lightly and the food comes out perfect every single time. I mean, we use the Joule probably 3 or 4 times a week and it is the best. So yeah, check that out. Again, we'll put a link to that in the show notes so you guys can see what I'm talking about. But man, it saves so much time.
Yeah, and I really recommend a Breville toaster oven as well.
Ooh.
It's because you can not only do like toast, but you can cook things like chicken strips, which we end up cooking a lot for the kids.
Ooh.
In
the toaster? No, toaster oven.
It's a toaster oven. It's a convection oven.
Nice.
So it that heats all the way around. Nice. And it heats, you know, the air. So it gets an even cook. And I mean, I've cooked pizzas in it. Like, yeah, they're just great, very useful tools. There's probably not a day that goes by where I don't use it.
Wow. Okay. I got to check that out. Quick story. I was standing in the kitchen 3 days ago making some breakfast and I turn around and my toaster is completely on fire. I'm talking huge flames coming out of my toaster. I'm like, what is happening? I was toasting some bread for my little one and I guess you need to clean your toasters because all the crumbs caught on fire. And thank God it was snowing. Like Chris just ran into the kitchen and like yanked it from the wall and just like threw it in the snow. I was like, well, I guess we need to buy a new toaster. So yeah, clean your toasters, people.
Yeah. If you haven't bought one, buy a Breville.
Okay. Yeah. But seriously, I after this whole happened, after the whole fire fiasco happened, I read something that said that 1 in 5 home fires, like house fires, start because of toasters. Like people not paying attention. So yeah, another life hack here, clean your toaster. Like shake it out, do what you gotta do because yeah, that was a hairball situation for sure.
Well, and you know, you can get complacent with toasters and just push the button and then and then leave it, right? So yeah. Also make sure to pay attention to what you're doing. Be in the room while it's cooking.
Totally. Before we leave the house, even before this happened, I always unplug the toaster from the wall. And I, for whatever reason, I was like, I don't know. Let's not leave it plugged in. Now, especially once we get a new toaster, that thing is never going to be plugged in if I'm not around.
Yeah. I always leave the Breville plugged in, but like, I know my mom doesn't even keep her toaster on the counter. It goes in the cupboard.
When she's done?
After every single time. Yeah.
Wow. Smart woman. Smart lady, your mama.
Yeah, she is. But related to this One of the things I want to mention is like having quality tools and supplies that you're working with in your kitchen mm-hmm. really matters. I know we're talking a lot about hacks, and a lot of times hacks can be you know, like, oh, buy the cheapest thing type of thing. But what we're saying is a lot of times buy quality so yeah. that you don't have to keep replacing it. Or, you know, I'll give you an example. Okay. So I had this peeler, like vegetable peeler type okay. of thing.
Yeah.
Okay. And for like 3 years, it was dull.
Why did you keep it?
Exactly. Like I was like, I hardly ever, you know, would use it. I'd use it like once every couple weeks.
Okay.
Right. And so it wasn't like I was using it very often, but I got in this thing. Every time I grabbed it, I'd start using it. I'd be like, oh, this sucks. And I forget about it. And I go to the store and I forget to buy one. And this just went on and on and on until Carly bought me one for Christmas last year.
Nice.
Because she could see how frustrated I was with with the one we had. And and it made all the difference. Now I use the new one and it's sharp and it's a quality one and done. I'm yeah. like, oh, I should have done that so much sooner. But buying and sharpening, you know, buying quality knives, ones that you can sharpen, really important. You don't have to go buy a whole set. And that's the key. Like you can buy one or two really quality knives that you're going to use consistently
yeah.
rather than buying a 12-piece set that is crappy.
Totally. You and Carly bought us a really nice knife for our wedding as a fantastic mm-hmm. wedding gift. And we have had to sharpen it maybe 3 times in 3 years. It's a great knife. Thanks.
Yeah. And but you don't, when you have something like that, you realize you don't need like 5 of them.
Yeah.
Because like, you're going to just, really cool. you know, wash it off and use it again.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So yeah. it actually ends up saving you more in the long run by buying quality. Now, we're not saying go out and spend $10,000 on a knife. That would be ludicrous. But instead of buying the set that's $50, buy the one knife that's $50.
Yeah. That's a good way to, yeah, that's great. I like that. Yeah.
So other things, right? You have something with sponges, right?
So shout out to my dear friend, Anne Van Brunt. She taught me this. I mind blown when I saw this. I was standing in her kitchen one night and we're just chit-chatting, having a cup of tea. And she went over to wash a dish and her sponge was cut in half. I'm like, what? What's up with your sponge? Like small sponges? She's like, no, what are you talking about? You cut it in half. Why? Like, why not? Like now you have two sponges. And if you think about like the sponge in general, like the grimy, you're going to use it however many times in the kitchen. It gets gross after a while. You toss it, you get a new one. But when we started cutting ours in half, it made no difference in terms of how things got clean. It saves a lot of money. And it's funny thinking about sponges in general, like you don't think about it that often. Like I need a sponge, I'll go buy a sponge, but that adds up. Like how many sponges are we really using in a year? Right. So ever since I started cutting my sponges in half, everything still gets clean and I'm spending half the money. There you go.
Nice. Yeah. There you go.
Thanks, Anne.
Yeah.
Yesterday, I saw that we had 5 apples that were starting to go a little bit gross. They started to get mealy. And I thought, well, that's a bummer. I don't want to throw these away. So instead, I made a pie. So when you have fruit that's starting to go a little bit meh, it can be any kind of fruit. You can turn it into a pie. You can turn it into jam if you like to jam. Bananas are always a big one around here. When bananas start to go brown, then I make muffins. So you can repurpose a lot of things, even if it starts to go bad, technically. So that's a great way to save
some money. Recipes that call for having, you know, like bananas, for example, be going like on the verge of going bad, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
The other thing is that you can freeze them. Like say your bananas are starting to turn. You could chop them up and then use them for smoothies.
Ooh, smoothies. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
But the key is to pay attention to the dates. So when you're actually shopping in the store, look at the dates of stuff. Mm-hmm. And what I do, because I do all the shopping, I do all the cooking, I plan everything. What I do is I go to the store and I know, okay, if I'm going to be eating this on this day, I can't buy something that is past the expiration date of when I'm going to be eating that.
Right.
You know? So like, say for example, you're buying chicken, but it's 3 days from now when you're making that meal. but they have a special on chicken, and it's like you can save $5 if you buy the one where the date is, you know, bad tomorrow or whatever. Mm-hmm. Right? Don't buy it. Just buy the chicken that you need, and you know, so that it doesn't go to waste.
I also, though, to save money, I'll buy that chicken and then I'll shred it up and I'll freeze it and use that for pot pie.
That's another way. But
yeah,
I'm horrible at using frozen food. I prefer cooking with fresh food. So I will go out of my way to plan properly to be able to do that.
Nice.
Yeah. But I want to share the secret of creating restaurant quality food, because how much does it cost to eat out?
Dude, so much. Ever since we moved here, so there's no restaurants around us. Like if we want to go get like a quality meal, we've got to drive at least 45 minutes, an hour, one direction. Maybe we'll find a Panda Express. You know what I mean? Like we're not getting quality restaurant style food. But since we moved here a few months ago, we've easily saved like anywhere from $3,000 to $4,000 just because we're not getting DoorDash every night and all this stuff. So it's amazing how much money you save when you are cooking at home. So tell me, Rory, how can I get restaurant quality food?
One word. Butter.
Butter. My favorite.
No, but it's true. If you go to most restaurants, the thing that makes it so good is that they cook it in butter, but it's more butter than you expect.
Like clarified butter? Like what kind of, like ghee? What kind of butter are we going?
No, I mean, in some cases, certain recipes call for stuff like that, but I'm just talking about like your regular old butter.
Butter.
Okay. If you're making a steak, if you want to have restaurant quality steak, create a butter and garlic marinade.
Oh, delicious.
Coat the whole steak in this. Mm-hmm. Then go put it on the barbecue and cook it. Mm-hmm. It'll taste like that $30, $40 steak.
That sounds delicious. Steak.
Like if you cook the temperature right, obviously. But
if you jewel it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there's that too. But that it really is one of the big keys. And I use minimal ingredients for seasoning. So a lot of times people think, oh, I got to like have all these crazy seasonings. Now, if I'm making like Indian food, obviously I need specific spices for that, or Thai food, right? Mm-hmm. But in most cases, when I'm making like anything with just like meats or pastas or, you know, your normal standard stuff, I'm using salt. I use a kosher sea salt, pepper. I use seasoned salt for red meats in particular. And I'll sometimes add it to sauces and pastas and stuff like that as well, to the actual sauce. And then really, other than that, those are like my main three. Other than that, I'll use like a little bit of oregano, depending on the recipe. And then I cook with a lot of garlic and onions anyway, like actual garlic and onion. And so time-saving wise, garlic, I buy a container of garlic.
The pre-chopped.
And I just scoop a thing rather than chopping a bunch of garlic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's things, you know, you can do, and keeping your recipes simple will really helps, especially with like the seasonings and stuff, so that you're not buying a whole bunch of stuff. If you're trying a recipe, it's really easy to go out and buy like four new spices.
Mm-hmm.
But if you only use that once, then that spice sits there and you never use it again. That meal cost you a lot of money.
Totally.
So I try and stick to the basics as much as possible.
Yeah, that's super sound advice. Yeah. All right, let's move on to some business growth hacks, because let's face it, that's why y'all are here. You want to learn about some business stuff, but we have to talk about life and business and how that all, you know, ties into one. It's pretty important, right? Number one on our business growth hack. You ready? You have to prioritize your brand promise, and message. And for those of you who are so sick of hearing me say that, I am not going to apologize, because it is so, so, so important. At least anywhere between 75 to 95% of all mistakes when it comes to online marketing can be fixed by addressing things that have to do with the brand, without fail, every time. At least that's been my experience working with my clients. If you're wondering, like, why aren't I growing online? What is happening? What's the disconnect? Go back to the brand. What are you offering? Does it connect to the target audience? Does it make sense? What is your mission around what you are selling? So that's really key.
This is really the 80-20 of fixing your business, right?
Yeah. I mean, this is, if you learn nothing except this, it's so, so, so important. Make sure your brand is super, super solid. And
well, and speaking of 80-20, there's lots of little, you know, tips and tricks as far as like, you know, doing like your business whenever you're doing something, like think of how can I 80-20 this? Like, So what does that mean? It means how can I get 80% of the results by doing 20% of the work? And everything has this, right? We're given a long list of things that we need to do in our business, sometimes by our mentors, sometimes just by the hundreds of people who are pitching us stuff like, oh, you should do your business this way or 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 this way. And it gets overwhelming, right? Well, you've got to narrow it down and say like, I can't do all that.
Yeah.
It's just not possible.
Right.
So how do you look at it and you have to go, well, if I only could do these two things, these three things, what would they be? What's going to actually get me the result?
Mm-hmm.
So
focus on what you can accomplish first.
Yeah. And we use that with advertising as well. We'll put up an ad and we'll cut it very quickly if it's not performing the way we want. We're not, you know, we don't wait. Could it be a good ad? Potentially.
But how much money are you willing to invest in finding that out?
Exactly. Yeah. So you need to be able to make decisions quickly about this stuff and not spend a lot of money. So that's one of the ways is, you know, you got 24 hours to see if your ad works. Put $20 behind it. If it doesn't get the result you're looking for, cut it. Try another one. Then try another one. Try another one. Try another one.
And it didn't used to be like that, though. No. So this is, we're recording this in December of 2020, and this is what's working right now. So 10 years down the line, if we're still doing this and that becomes completely irrelevant, we apologize. So yeah, but that's what's working right now.
And I'm specifically talking about Facebook ads.
Yeah.
Yeah. So with Google ads, it's completely different. There, you need slow build. 30 days.
Yeah. Slow build. Yeah.
30 days is like your minimum to see if an ad is actually performing the way you want it to.
Yes. I'm glad you're saying that. I think this is important for people to know. As a business owner, if you've hired a marketing firm to help you with your growth and you're using Google AdWords, give them the grace, give them the time to actually get you results in 2 months. Do not expect results overnight because that's not how Google works. It is the long game on Google. Now, if you're
it's the long game on Facebook as well, but how you approach it is very short game.
Yeah.
Right? But it still takes time to get the data that you need in order to make proper decisions.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And if you've hired a firm that can guarantee you results in a week, I would be very skeptical and I would be questioning how they're getting you the results. And if it's a real lead or not, if it's a qualified lead. So,
well, and then speaking of hacks around stuff like that, is that one of the best things you can do is not spend all your money on all of these cheap things.
Yeah.
Right. So that where they go, oh, I can do that for $20. I can do that for $5. I can do that for $100. And, you know, everyone else is, you know, the people who are really actually doing that are charging thousands. You're just throwing your money away.
100%. It sounds enticing, especially with startups. You're on a budget, whatever that looks like. We talked about this in the how to identify a scam episode a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, it's so important. Like you need to understand that in the online marketing world, you get what you pay for. And so, yeah, be very skeptical if you go on Fiverr and someone's like, I'm going to get you 10,000, you know, Facebook followers in 24 hours. I'd question those things. So yeah, do your research. Do your research is a big part of all of this. That's a pretty important business growth hack.
We had an episode called Relationships, Not Transactionships. Mm-hmm. And this is a big hack for your business. Okay. You can grow your business based on the relationships that you make and how you treat your customers. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. So the big mistake people make with building their funnels is they build the funnel for people to go in to their funnel and then they come out the other side and all that's happened is a transaction. there's no relationship really being built. And a lot of times they're just cast off and you're just focusing on lead generation, lead generation, lead generation. I see this happen over and over again. Mm-hmm. But you have to actually build a system for yourself and for your business, which actually takes them through being a customer. Mm-hmm. And once they're a customer, how do you get them to refer other people to you?
Right.
Well, if you don't provide a good service, you don't provide good products, that's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to look at your business holistically if you, you know, really want it to grow. And that is a hack. I promise you it's a hack, because if you don't do it that way, you're just throwing all your money into a funnel that doesn't create more customers for you.
Right.
So you're always putting that money in the front end, but you're not utilizing it properly on the back end. So if you think about it, you paid for one customer, but they referred you two more customers. You didn't have to pay any marketing for those two more customers.
Mm-hmm. Do the work up front.
Yeah.
Do the work up front. And in large part, I think what makes that method successful and that strategy successful is by respecting people's time as well. Because you can't get people into your funnel and then just send them an email like every single day, just here's, do this, here's the offer, buy this, buy now, buy that. There has to be some relationship cultivating there.
So. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And the other side of that is asking for feedback.
Right? Oh, yeah. It's a big one. Yeah.
Yeah. And that means asking for reviews too, like reviews and testimonials and things like that. I am not the best at this, but there are systems you can put into place with your follow-up that'll do it for you automatically. And that's something that we're working on right now, is because, you know, we want more reviews and testimonials so that we can help more people.
It's not just help more people, but it's also to understand how we can help our business continue to grow, right? Because if we're not getting proper feedback, and I'm not talking about going to your mom or dad or brother or sister or whatever, or your husband, your wife, go to your actual customers and say, I would love your honest feedback on this. Here's a survey. Use something like SurveyMonkey. I think it's like free for the first, you know, month or something. Get the free trial. Ask these people what their thoughts are. Where are the holes that you aren't seeing because you're too close to it? So when in doubt, just ask. Is that easy? You know? And reward these people for doing that, for taking the time. Again, be respectful of their time. If someone's going to take the time to do that, reward them with a coupon or a free, I don't know, Starbucks gift card or whatever it might be that fits into your business model. And of course, like all things, I'm sure you guys, you've seen this. If you're watching in all episodes, I always have this in the back here. It says, work hard, stay humble. I have it in my office for a reason. It's very important. I'm a Leo. My head can get pretty big sometimes. So I have to remind myself, stay humble, super humble in everything you do in your business, authentically, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks so much for listening to this week's episode. Join us next week where we will continue part two of our life hacks to save you time and money. We'll be discussing money saving and spending hacks that both Rory and I use daily, along with real estate hacks and a few bonus internet hacks that you will not want to miss. As always, you can connect with us at bpbpodcast.com and be sure to follow us on social media and join our weekly live chats every Tuesday. All right, we'll see you next week.